This is Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering. The clock is ticking. Governor Maura Healey is capping the number of families entering the state's emergency shelter system at 7,500. The latest numbers are above 7,300 and growing. The governor will join us from our studio in the State House today, but first we start outside, where housing advocates are rallying against the limits that Governor Healey wants to put on the state's emergency shelter system for families. Now, just before the rally began, we spoke with one of its organizers, Kelly Turley, Associate Director of the Massachusetts Coalition for the Homeless. And I started by asking her, what does she want from the governor? Why are they rallying?
We're gathering in front of the State House today to call on the Healey administration to put a pause on their plan to suspend the right to shelter by creating a waiting list for otherwise eligible families in need of shelter. And we're calling on the legislature to appropriate the funds that are needed to keep the emergency shelter system going.
So let's talk about that appropriation. So the Healey administration's asked for $250 million more from the legislature. In a statement, House Speaker Ron Mariano said the House, quote, continues to evaluate the need for additional funding, end quote. Do you think that's going to come through? Is it realistic that to expect the legislature to respond and do it?
We do anticipate that the legislature will respond positively to the supplemental budget request. In our conversations with legislators, we know that there are some unanswered questions around how long the money that was requested by the Healey administration would last, what more is needed, and how do we actually move forward to make sure that families are able to transition into longer-term permanent housing. But historically, this is a program, the emergency assistance program, that does require supplemental funding almost every year, mid-year, to adjust to adapt to the number of families in need of shelter.
So you've asked for a pause from the governor. Pause for what? And then when that pause is over, does the wait list go into effect, Kelly?
We're asking for the pause because the legislature actually requires the administration to give 90 days advance notice before making any eligibility changes or benefit reductions in the Emergency Assistance Family Shelter Program, and that official notice hasn't been given. While the governor has requested supplemental funds, they haven't laid out their plans in a formal way to the legislature about how much money they need and what will happen if the funds aren't received. So we're hoping that the administration will give that 90-day notice to allow the legislature to take time to act. We also know the legislature is set to end formal sessions for this calendar year just in a couple weeks on November 15th. And so we want there to be time when the legislature comes back, if they aren't able to do it before they leave on November 15th, so that when they come back in January, that this can be on the top of their list.
We're talking with Kelly Turley, Associate Director for the Massachusetts Coalition for the Homeless, rallying outside the State House today for a pause on the wait list for the for emergency shelter for families in Massachusetts. Let me give you a scenario, Kelly. So let's say there's a pause. The legislature doesn't give an additional $250 million, 90 days passes, and the legislature essentially is fine with going forward with a 7,500 family cap and a wait list. Then what? Are you fine with the governor going ahead as she has laid out?
We will continue to advocate with legislators, with the federal delegation, with the Healey administration to make sure that Massachusetts is upholding its obligations under the right to shelter law to make sure that all eligible families are able to receive the shelter and services that they need. So, we're asking for a pause now because that advance notice hasn't been given, but we will be organizing, rallying, advocating to make sure that the resources do become available. We've been working with families, advocates, and providers to be able to come up with recommendations to the Healey administration and the legislature around paths forward to make sure that families have access to shelter, wraparound services, longer-term housing supports, and homelessness prevention resources. We'll be presenting those recommendations to the legislature and administration this week. But we want to make sure that there really is time to have those fuller conversations, that there's transparency, and that the concrete plans are in place. We expect a waiting list to go into effect as early as tomorrow, but families who are applying for shelter now aren't sure what that will mean or where they'll stay in the meantime. And so part of the request is also to make sure that there are temporary spaces in congregate settings where families can stay safely if a waiting list is established.
So I do want to get to that, Kelly, and we will in a second, but I have one more policy question for you before we go there. You know, part of the, so the governor's made basically two arguments about this wait list. One saying subject to appropriation, right, that the law is subject to appropriation mm-hmm. and the appropriation isn't there. But she's also argued that it was signed at a different time, in a different reality, and it was signed by Governor Dukakis in 1983. Is mm-hmm. she wrong? You know, reporting in the Boston Globe says that at this rate, the state could be on the hook to house more than 13,000 families by the end of the fiscal year. Is she wrong?
Well, certainly the law was signed 40 years ago, so it was a different time. But the heart of the law around making sure that we are providing safe spaces for children and their parents, that still rings true today. The need is there. And one of the main requests that we have is for the state to put an increased emphasis on helping families exit shelter. We were happy to see the administration's announcement yesterday about offering 1,200 rental subsidies to families already in shelter. We know that right now many families are staying in shelter for well over a year, and they aren't able to access the resources they need to safely exit shelter into safe, healthy, permanent housing. And with an increase in subsidies and other supports, more families will be able to exit shelter swiftly, and that will leave room for newer families who are just entering into homelessness.
And just to note that those vouchers are for families who have been in shelter for at least 18 months. So mm-hmm. what happens to a family that finds itself on the wait list? It doesn't, you know, it doesn't qualify for safety and medical reasons to get into shelter right away. Where does a family go, Kelly?
Those are our concerns. And in our recent briefing last week with the administration, they said that even families with those really intense health and safety risks also will be put on a waiting list, but just higher than other families who may not have those critical medical needs. In the past and right now for families who are ineligible for shelter, which is actually the vast majority of families experiencing homelessness due to the narrow definitions used in terms of who's eligible for the right to shelter, many families are staying double or tripled up with family members or friends, staying in places not meant for human habitation.
What does that mean? Yeah, tell us.
Yeah, staying in cars, campgrounds. Hospital emergency rooms historically have been a place of high traffic for families experiencing homelessness. Massachusetts does have a very low rate of so-called street homelessness for families. So we don't usually see families staying in places like the Boston Common, but that's because for 40 years we've had this right to shelter. So we're very scared about what will happen to families and where they'll go, especially as the increasing number of families in shelter. There are many newly arrived immigrant families who do not have connections to other family members or friends here in Massachusetts.
Are you saying you're worried you're going to see families literally on the streets?
We are concerned. Absolutely.
So, Kelly, if you get this pause, what happens next?
We will continue to organize to be able to continue to meet with legislators, to bring families and advocates and providers with us to the State House and virtually to meet with lawmakers to really emphasize the critical nature of this program. We know that it takes money to be able to make sure that families are safe, but in a state like Massachusetts, given the revenue and income here, that this is something that's not out of reach for us, that we can continue to provide the right to shelter to all eligible families with children.
Kelly Turley of the Massachusetts Coalition for the Homeless spoke with us earlier this morning. They were one of the organizers of the rally happening on the grounds of the State House. Here in Studio 2, WBUR's Gabriella Emanuel, who's been doing extensive reporting on this subject. Welcome back.
Thank you.
So let's just start with your reactions to what we heard from Kelly there.
Yeah, I think there's just a very hard situation here. There are a lot of families in need of housing, and the state says it's running out of space and running out of funds. So there's no clear, easy answer.
So, and I'll remind listeners, Governor Maura Healey will join us here on Radio Boston later in the hour. For now, a couple of extra things I didn't really get to ask Kelly, Gabriella. this idea that then once there's a wait list, people will be screened for safety and medical, and maybe still on a wait list, but higher up on the wait list. What does that screening even mean, Gabriella?
So what is basically seems to be happening is that there will be several layers added to the entry process for shelter. You'll still go through the initial eligibility process, which is extensive in its own right. Things like income limit, establishing, proving identity, family relationships, proving why you're homeless. You have to fit into one of four buckets. But once you prove you're eligible, then there will be a questionnaire to assess medical and safety risks. And if you do have risk factors, there will actually be a full medical assessment. So things like if you need refrigeration for your medication, you will be bumped higher on the list. If you're in your third trimester of pregnancy, if you're immunocompromised, things like that will bump you up. But as you said, those families don't get shelter. They just get a higher place on the wait list. And then when a family does exit shelter, they can take one of those vacant spots.
So I used to run a nonprofit organization that had shelters. I was really struck by the plan for notifying people. It seemed like it might have gaps in it. So how are people to be notified if they make it off the wait list? And what have you heard about that?
So the state says folks who are on the wait list will be notified either through a phone call, a text message, or an email. I've spoken to advocates who were briefed by the state about this and say there were many questions and many concerns regarding this. The worry is that you'll lose contact with people, especially when they're at this point in their lives where they're very unstable. They may be transient, moving from place to place. I've spoken with folks who are looking to get shelter and had trouble charging their phone so that they can get phone calls, so they can check their email. Another big issue is for newly arrived immigrants, if they have an international number, not a domestic one, will that be contacted? The answer seems to be then it will be an email. What if they're transitioning to a new phone? So there are a lot of questions around how to reach people. But I will say this is something nonprofits and social service agencies have done for a long time. And there are systems and things you could do, such as having a point of contact somewhere where people could check in, a PO box style system, maybe having a outreach or a contact person. But so far, the state has said it will be email, text message, or phone call.
So we've talked about this ticking clock, and the threshold the governor has set is 7,500 families. I know last count yesterday was above 7,300. Yep. Do we know roughly? I mean, how many families are coming in a day? When do we think we hit 75?
So the state does have a dashboard, and what we can see from that is roughly somewhere between 30 and 40 new families are entering the system each day. Sometimes it's higher, sometimes it's lower, but that's the general range. When I spoke to advocates briefed by the state, they said about 10 families exit shelter each day. And that's where you have the issue. There are more families entering than exiting. So the population within the shelter system is growing. And if you actually chart out the growth over the past many years, it is a remarkably steep incline in the past few months. Just the line looks like it's going straight up. I mean, and as you mentioned, if the population continues to grow at the current rate, the state is predicting about 13,000 households in shelter if this cap doesn't go into effect by the end of the fiscal year, by the end of June. But that gives you a sense of how many families might be left out of shelter if this cap is implemented.
We're just going to let that number sit there for a second. WBUR's Gabriella Emanuel, thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you.
You're listening to Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering, and we are awaiting Massachusetts Governor Maura Healey, who will join us in our studio at the State House. Here with us in Studio 2, Megan Irons, longtime Boston Globe reporter, now a faculty member in journalism at Boston University. Welcome, Megan.
Thank you for having me.
Great to have you. And on the line, Jim Aloisi, former State Transportation Secretary and a member of the Transit Matters Board of Directors. Welcome back, Jim.
Thanks for having me back.
So I want to set up a couple of other key things to talk with the governor about today. And Megan, I'll start with you because just this morning she announced some new guidelines on clemency. Intrigued by this because she also announced two additional people she'll seek pardons for. Quickly, the guidelines focus on means of addressing unfairness in the criminal justice system, ensuring accountability and compassion, taking into consideration people's behavior after the offense and after incarceration. The governor has done more in the way of pardons than anybody since Bill Weld in 1991. First one to do it in their first term since Bill Weld in 91, and more since Dukakis in 1983. Mm. Your reactions to all of this?
This is really terrific news. As you know, we when I was at the Globe, we wrote a story about the unfairness of the life in prison without parole system, and that the SJC in Massachusetts had said some parts of it was unconstitutional. And we had seen from that report that governors were very reluctant to offer pardon or give people a break out of prison. So this is tremendous news for those men, mostly Black men, who are still incarcerated, who are nothing like they were when their crimes were committed, and who have no path out of prison except, as my colleague would say, in a casket. So this is tremendous news for that effort and for people who feel that the life without parole system, sentencing somebody for life until death is unfair and unjust.
Yes. So SJC being Supreme Judicial Court, I'll turn to you here, Jim Aloisi, because one of the things to note here, so for example, Governor Charlie Baker didn't engage in any commutations or pardons until his final year. He was in office for 8 years. Many consider this to be risky politics. Maura Healey is in her first year as governor, has some big issues on the table right now. I mean, there will be a hearing this afternoon for an injunction on her move on the right to shelter law. We're going to talk with you about the MBTA in a little bit, which is a huge pain point in her administration. Is it risky to take on something like this? And does it matter that it's risky to take on something like this early in a governor's first term?
I think it is. It does matter, and it matters in a good way. I mean, you know, the reality is politics is present in anything that the governor does, even when she's dealing with issues that you might say are moral issues, right? Not just operational issues like tea, but moral questions about things like commuting sentences or dealing with the housing issues that you were talking about earlier and the shelter issues. So when you're in your first term, in theory at least, you have your highest amount of political capital. And I think it's to the governor's credit, frankly, that she's aware of that and is not afraid of using that capital at a time when it may be at its highest level, in order to get some things done that meet her values and I think the values of most of the people in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts.
We're speaking with Jim Aloisi, former state transportation secretary and journalist and professor of journalism, Megan Irons, here on Radio Boston as we await Massachusetts Governor Maura Healey, who will be joining us from our State House studio in just a little bit here on the show. We've just talked about clemency, an announcement on her policy, and two additional people that she's seeking pardons for, recommending pardons for, just earlier this morning. I do want to spend a couple minutes now on the MBTA. We're in an interesting moment here, Jim Aloisi. So we've had several months now with new general manager Phil Ng in the job. Lots of additional tough news. The Green Line extension being constructed incorrectly in the first place, slow zones since the spring, new problems with the electrical system on the green lines, the catenary hookup on the top, and yet we're hearing these other notes being hit. Brian Kane, the executive director of the T's Advisory Board on WBZ, saying it looks like now the adults are in charge. An editorial from the Boston Herald saying this guy looks like the real thing, basically. Are we seeing the beginning of something truly different at the MBTA?
I think so. I think you can say at this point that the Healey Driscoll administration has put together the architecture of a personnel structure at the T that people increasingly have confidence in. And that's not just Phil Ng, that starts with him, but it's the folks that he's brought in at that next senior level, a cadre of people who are highly experienced, who have roots in New York, who've come here to work on these issues. I think it's also a very talented MBTA board that the governor has put into place, and to give her credit for agreeing to provide the city of Boston with the seat, and the appointment that the mayor made is an extraordinary appointment. So we've got that architecture, that structural infrastructure, if you will, in place that I think is inspiring confidence. But the task ahead is a most challenging one for any number of reasons. First, you still have a situation where nearly a 25% of the entire subway system is still having a slow zone problem. You've got a looming operating budget shortfall that will be significant when it hits, probably in the next 12 to 18 months. And you don't yet have, I think, in the Commonwealth, and I hope the governor will address it, a climate plan that really focuses, as it should, on mode shift, meaning getting people out of their cars and onto transit, moving more people in fewer vehicles.
So
there's a lot to do, but I think she's off to a decent start.
So a decent start there, Megan Irons. I am mindful that the T is the heartbeat of so many things that a governor will be evaluated on: a long-term housing strategy, how it affects the economy, whether young people stay in this state. It's an equity issue.
Yeah.
And it's in bad shape.
Yes.
So can the governor get enough done in a term on the T?
Well, it is a monumental problem, as you noted. And I would say that a lot of the problems that the new administration is dealing with, both Healy and Ms. Deng, are things they inherited. But what's refreshing about it, as Jim said, was that they are at least acknowledging some of the problems, and they're being much more forthright and much more upfront about some of these things. And I think that's very refreshing. But as Jim also says, when you're talking about people who rely on the T, who need to take 2-3 buses and a train to get where they are going, none of this is refreshing for them, and none of this is satisfactory for them, because their problems remain. They are on the T for hours, and it's unacceptable. And so to your question about whether or not this is something that could be addressed within a governor's term, I don't think so. It is a long-term problem. It took us forever to get to this place. We've been mired in this place, and it's going to take the governor, with all the efforts that have been made so far, a longer time than just 4 years to get it fixed.
We're awaiting Massachusetts Governor Maura Healy at our studio in the State House. We expect her any minute now. So just a heads up both to listeners and to our panelists, Megan Irons and Jim Aloisi, that when she arrives, we'll then wrap this quickly so that we can turn to the governor. Jim, this transparency piece is one that we hear from analysts a lot, that Phil Ng, the new general manager, is showing a level of transparency we haven't seen before. Do you agree with that?
Oh, certainly. I think that, I think it's important for everyone's confidence in the system that he continue to do this. He's done a remarkably good job being transparent. He had a press conference on the Green Line extension issues about a week or 10 days ago, where he stood alone at a podium and just told it straight, and not only assessed what the problems were, but also had a plan to fix it. And so that's the kind of transparency that is critical at a time when people have lost faith and lost confidence in the system. The way you restore that, in part, is to be fully transparent with them. And so if I could just play off what Megan just said, if I were advising the governor on this long-term T rehabilitation effort, I'd be thinking about announcing a 10-year plan for the revitalization of public transportation in Metro Boston. It'll take that long. But you know what? We built the Quabbin Reservoir in 10 years. We did the MWRA Harbor cleanup in 10 years. We can make our public transportation a gem nationally if we have a 10-year effort to step up investment, to make procurement easier to do, to do a lot of things that will assist Phil Ng and his team in reversing the trends of the past few years.
So,
but it will take that kind of sustained effort and commitment to make a difference.
Megan Irons, I hear Jim Aloisi on that. And these long-term infrastructure concerns take that kind of time. I'm also thinking about the people you're talking about who are riding two trains and a bus, and the way their livelihood, their time with their families and children rely on it getting better and faster now, and that tension in the equity dimension of that. And the rock and the hard place of disinvestment over a long period of time that got us here. I almost don't know how to ask the question other than how do we keep that equity question front and center, you know, in the middle of this? Because then there's buses, right? On top of all of this.
On top of all of this. You know, a couple of weeks ago, the governor had the Advisory for Black Empowerment had its first listening session. And guess where it was? Right in the heart of Dorchester. I think the governor needs to do much more of that in terms of these long entrenched issues. She has to move out of Beacon Hill, which she has been doing, and into the communities and getting people more and more engaged on these particular issues. These families are working multiple jobs. They have multiple issues, issues within their families to deal with. And it is really incumbent upon the state to do more to make this information much more accessible to them.
And on that note, Governor Healey is arriving in our studio. Megan Irons of Boston University, Jim Aloisi, board member of Transit Matters. Thanks so much to both of you for joining us.
And thank you for having us.
You're listening to Radio Boston. I'm Tisiana Deering. Massachusetts Governor Maura Healey joins us now from the State House. Happy Halloween, Governor.
Happy Halloween.
Great to have you. So much to talk about. I want to jump right in, beginning with some announcements you made this morning around clemency, seeking pardons for two additional people, Robert Miller and Eric Nada, both of whom served short sentences in their early 20s, one for counterfeit licenses, one for distribution of a Class A controlled substance, and some new guidelines considering clemency, addressing miscarriages of justice, taking into account accountability with compassion, considering post-offense behavior and character. Why do this now, Governor?
Oh, well, you know, I'm glad you asked about this. For background, clemency is an important tool that a governor has. It's a tool that, in my view, can be used to soften some of the harsher edges of our criminal justice system. And today, I issued new clemency guidelines that really focus on creating a system that is more fair, that takes into, for example, consideration of the unique circumstances of each individual petitioner who is presenting themselves before the parole board for consideration. And I think it's important. I think it is long overdue in terms of an update to our clemency guidelines. And I'm proud of the work of the team in issuing these guidelines. They did so in communication with a number of stakeholders, prosecutors, lawyers, attorneys, victims, rights organizations, and civil rights advocates. So it really does reflect input from a diversity of stakeholders, and I think it's the kind of guidelines that really are appropriate for the modern time.
You are, to use your words, you are way out in front on quote-unquote softening harsher edges of our criminal justice system. You're the first governor since Bill Weld in 1991 to recommend a pardon in your first year in office. A lot of people would consider this risky. Why choose to be so far out front in this, Governor Healey?
Well, it's just so important to me as a former prosecutor and civil rights lawyer, and now with responsibility as governor, to make sure that we have the appropriate kind of clemency and parole guidelines in place. There was no sense in delaying this. There's no sense in waiting. It's why I moved quickly to seek pardon for 11 individuals. That happened already. I recently sought pardon for an additional two individuals, and I've made new appointments to the parole board, including individuals with lived experience, including individuals with a social work background. But the bottom line, Tiziana, is that these new guidelines are about impact. They're about having an impact on the lives of hundreds of people in our state. And it's not a responsibility that we take lightly. As you know, I was attorney general, and I was charged with the responsibility of investigating and prosecuting through my office so many crimes, holding people accountable, protecting victims. It's also the case that our system and the system for clemency and parole has not taken into account certain things that we should account for, that scientific-based evidence really points towards in terms of brain development and the circumstances of individuals and also the systemic biases that have existed within the system. So it's a big deal. But for me, you know, it's justice delayed is justice denied. And I don't want to wait to get going when it comes to securing justice and doing what is right and making sure that we have as fair a system as possible.
So let's turn our attention now to Right to Shelter, a rally happening outside the State House. As this clock is ticking down, a short question to start. The question has been a November 1st versus 7,500 families as sort of the trigger for a wait list. Just to clarify, Governor, will you wait until we have 7,500 families in the state's emergency shelter system, or will it be tomorrow, November 1st?
Well, I mean, it's sort of one and the same in the sense that every day we're seeing, Tatiana, between 40 and 50 families a day arriving here in Massachusetts. That's approximately 150 people a day because these are families. And so, you know, as I have said for a long time now, we do not have the shelter space, the physical space. We do not have the number of shelter providers and service providers to be able to withstand this capacity. And we don't have the funding. I've been begging the Biden administration for resources, for funding, seeking Medicaid waivers, seeking assistance with congregate sites, seeking help with staffing, seeking more additional support to support the number of children in schools. Half of the new entrants into our emergency shelter system are children, and many of them are of school age. And right now, our districts just don't even have enough teachers or educators when it comes to ELL needs. So, you know, that's just what's happening on the ground. We have really reached a limit.
So, the wait list will
to be
start
clear,
tomorrow.
The wait list will start. No, the wait list will start, as I said before, once we reach the expected capacity of 7,500.
Okay. So,
and at that point, we've been clear as well with the public that, you know, there'll be a triaging system. There'll be a wait list that will be brought on board. I recently put in charge General Rice, who was the former head of our National Guard under the administration of Governor Patrick and has extensive experience in emergency management. And I just want to say everybody has been doing all that they can, and I am so grateful to all the service providers, shelter providers who are out there. It's also really important to me, Tiziana, this is why we need more housing in the state. We're talking about migrants, and yes, half of the folks now in emergency shelter are migrants, but half are families from Massachusetts, and it's why we need a housing bond bill to create more housing in the state, to create more affordable housing, to create more housing across the state, because this is something that is really impacting us as a state.
So, Governor,
$4 billion, that's my bond bill proposal from last week.
And I'm going to come at you fast and furious today because I have so many questions, and I know you and I have done this before. I know you're going to give me the answers that you want, and if we have to talk over each other a little bit, we'll do that. Let's stay with your housing bill, which includes things like allowing cities and towns to charge taxes on high-end real estate transactions. It allows people to build accessory dwellings with limited interference from cities and towns on their property. What specifically in that housing legislation would solve this problem for families in Massachusetts already who might find themselves facing a wait list for the Right to Shelter law?
Well, the reason we have families, Massachusetts families in shelter right now is because they can't afford rent. They can't afford housing in Massachusetts. So this Affordable Homes Act, which is my $4 billion housing bond bill proposal, does a few things. It would preserve or renovate spaces to create nearly 30,000 affordable units. It would create an additional 40,000 new homes in our state across the state. It would importantly address issues in public housing by repairing, modernizing 43,000 units of public housing, some of them
would that be vacant?
Well, as you've reported, some of these are in such bad condition that they're actually there and vacant. So the housing bond bill does a lot around public housing, around affordable housing, around market rate housing. We've also made a proposal to increase the amount covered by rental vouchers right now, because again, rents have just gone up. And what exists right now for the rental voucher amount you know, in many instances, doesn't come close to helping families actually get into housing. So
let's
all
stay
these
there.
Things taken together are really, really important to dealing with what is, I think, the number one challenge for our state, which is affordability, and in particular, the lack of affordable housing that in the state.
Let's stay there with the new announcement of 1,200 vouchers for rental vouchers, giving 1,200 families that have been in the system for more than 18 months help to move into apartments. How fast can that be done? Who does that matchmaking into? Do we have the apartments available? You know, how quickly do you expect to see that release units in this 7,500 that we're capping at, or that you are proposing to cap?
Well, I think one of the ways we're going to get people exited from shelter is by giving them jobs, getting work authorization. And, you know, that's why I've done something different here, because in the moment we need to do something different. I have been asking the Biden administration to expedite work authorizations. People are here. They come across the border, and yet they're not allowed to work under the law, or at least not allowed to work under the law for a certain amount of time. The good news is, thanks to our advocacy, the Biden administration is coming here, and we will have the Department of Homeland Security here working with our teams now on site to expedite the processing of work authorizations. I also have set up, though, a program that is working on job skills training for those who are not yet work authorization eligible but are in process, because it's a way to get them engaged and receiving job skill training and able to be out and supporting businesses who are willing to take on this capacity. So these are important things that we need to do. The mobile vouchers to the approximately 1,200 EA families who've been in emergency shelter longer than 18 months, these are going to be tenant-based vouchers. They're going to be rental vouchers that are valid for housing units across the state. And, you know, we're looking to make these available, again, as a way to exit people.
How quickly do you think people can take advantage of those? Like, you know, an average
person?
Well,
they'll be able to take advantage of it right away. I mean, it's always a matter of finding the housing, which gets back to the point I'm trying to make here, is that we as a state need more housing. You talk to any family out there, you talk to any business out there, you talk to anybody who is, you know, in Massachusetts, but trying to make decisions about whether they're going to stay in Massachusetts, or employers, whether they're going to remain in Massachusetts or locate elsewhere. You talk to the number of folks who are sitting in emergency shelter right now. I mean, we need housing as a state, and it's why I went bold, because the moment requires it. A $4 billion bond authorization. These would be capital authorizations that will allow us to do the things that would generate a bunch more housing across the state. And you mentioned some, you know, getting rid of some of the exclusionary zoning practices, allowing communities to have these ADUs, which are accessory dwelling units, which I have to say, across the country, we've studied this a lot. That's really been a surefire way to increase housing stock, because it allows you to put on your property, build the equivalent of an in-law unit, right, that could be then, you know, used. And so, you know, these are important steps.
I want to come back to the work authorization clinic that happens the week of November 13th. As I understand, it'll be done in mm-hmm. Middlesex County. A thing I'd like to understand better, Governor, at the end of that, so somebody comes through that clinic, at the end, will they have work authorization, or is it a clinic that gets them through the paperwork filing?
It's going to be both, because it depends on where you are in the process. But the whole point is, you know, there's some people that somewhere may have started an application, but, you know, it hasn't been completed. They haven't done the biometrics, those sorts of things. There are others who haven't started to complete a work authorization application yet, and so we'll be able to help them with that. But the good news is, it's going to be essentially one-stop shopping. You come in, you're going to get processed, and you're going to leave with a piece of paper that either says your work authorization is coming or it's in hand. And with that, we also are going to have on site the job training aspect. So we're going to have actual access to employers there and those who are looking to employ. And, you know, I need to work as quickly as possible to deal with an unprecedented number of folks right now who've come into Massachusetts, who need shelter and, most importantly, are looking for work. And, you know, we can do this, but it is certainly a challenging situation, and that's why I worked closely in recent days with the Biden administration on this to get the Department of Homeland Security to Massachusetts to help us process people, because at the end of the day, this is really a federal problem. It was created really by the federal government and lack of action over the years by Congress in particular. And now we as states are having to deal with the, you know, the outflow of it, which is this crisis we face right now at the border.
So let's stay with this sense of crisis. We're speaking of Massachusetts Governor Maura Healey, who's joining us from the State House. Governor, I'm going to come back to this looming wait list. And I want to acknowledge that Lawyers for Civil Rights has filed a lawsuit. There will be a hearing this afternoon. They're seeking an injunction. And there's a rally at the State House today seeking a pause for 90 days on the wait list. We talked with Kelly Turley, who's from Massachusetts Coalition for the Homeless, this morning before that rally. I'm going to play some sound there about her concerns about what happens if that wait list goes into effect.
Staying in cars, campgrounds, hospital emergency rooms historically have been a place of high traffic for families experiencing homelessness. Massachusetts does have a very low rate of so-called street homelessness for families. So we don't usually see families staying in places like the Boston Common, but that's because for 40 years we've had this right to shelter. So we're very scared about what will happen to families and where they'll go.
Governor, I know you have thought about this. I am not suggesting you haven't thought about what's going to happen to families when they go on the wait list. I asked Kelly Turley, Kelly, are you telling me you're worried we're going to see families sleeping on the streets? And she said yes. What do you expect is going to happen for families who find themselves low on the wait list? Where will they go? What can the state do for them? And are you worried about them?
Well, you know, of course I'm worried. I'm worried about any family in our state who is experiencing housing insecurity. I mean, my heart aches for moms and dads out there who, in particular, who have kids, and they don't have a roof over their head, okay? I mean, of course I'm worried about that. I'm also trying to deal with a situation where something that I don't think any advocate had predicted or seen before, and that was the arrival of 40 or 50 families a day from the border into Massachusetts, families seeking housing. And, you know, we have worked really hard to make sure that they find housing in hotels and motels that are, they're in our schools, that they're getting access to services. And again, I'm just so grateful to all the service providers and the teamwork, the partnership out there. But the fact of the matter remains, we're seeing an unprecedented capacity strain on personnel, on infrastructure, and on funding. And it is why, because this is a federal problem created by the federal government, I've been asking the federal government to help us in Massachusetts by setting up congregate sites to house people, by staffing those sites, and paying us, Massachusetts, because again, it is us as a state that is having to pay to house folks. And, you know, I also was clear about, you know, how we were going to go about dealing with this, and it's why we have the triaging and the screening for eligibility, that we're evaluating safety risk concerns, that we're evaluating medical concerns and needs, and, you know, basically establishing a priority for placement. It is also why we desperately need housing, because even before the migrant crisis was here on our shores, we had a problem within our emergency shelter system, and that we didn't have enough housing in the state, and that rents were high and increasingly out of reach for people. People couldn't afford down payments on homes. People couldn't afford to downsize. I mean, the price of real estate in Massachusetts is high. And so that's why we really need to drive a solution around generating more housing stock. And that's exactly what my housing bond bill does.
So in the short term, you've asked for $250 million from the legislature, additional funding. In a statement on Monday, House Speaker Ron Mariano said the House, quote unquote, continues to evaluate the need for additional funding, end quote. He's also said they will not take action on the right to shelter law and suggested that you ought to make a new executive order about it. Have you considered that? Will you make a new executive order about the right to shelter law?
Well, I already issued an emergency declaration about this several weeks ago, about the crisis that we're in. So I've already issued an executive order. I did file emergency regulations today, setting out what we would be doing with regards to a wait list and emergency shelter operations. And I continue to call for relief from the federal government. We need help with staffing. We need help with funding. And again, it's a federal problem that we're having to deal with as states. And people have stepped up admirably. And the legislature has provided significant funding towards this already. Yes, I've sought additional supplemental funding. But, you know, we really need help from the federal government here.
So Governor Healey and Maura Healey is joining us from the State House. I want to pivot for just a moment and turn our eyes to a global issue. WBUR has been following a Medway family trapped in the Gaza Strip since October 7th, since the attacks by Hamas in Israel and the subsequent war in Gaza. Here's a bit of the update that Abood Akal provided WBUR on Monday.
We don't care much about how intense the bombing is, as long as we come out alive in the morning. As of today, and as of this recording, still no update from the State Department, other than that there's no information about when we could expect to exit Gaza. We've been hearing reports that it's more complex and to get us out of Gaza, and we're hoping that a resolution will take place as soon as possible.
In our last minute, have you heard from the Biden administration or have you spoken with them about this family and what it will take to get them out?
No, I know that Senators Warren and Markey have spoken with the Biden administration and continue as our federal representatives to work with and urge the State Department and the White House to do everything possible to provide assistance to all Massachusetts families affected by the horrific situation. And, you know, my heart goes out to those impacted by this. But, you know, I was pleased to see the Biden administration yesterday call for, in addition to aid, also call for the end of hate speech on our college campuses. I mean, that's something that's happening within our own borders here in Massachusetts that I'm watching and paying attention to. And, you know, there's we've got to stem the rise of anti-Semitism and white supremacy in this country.
Massachusetts Governor Maura Healey joining us from the State House. I know we covered a lot today. Really appreciate your time, Governor. Thank you.
Thanks for having me.